Good evening. this is Shai Ostrov, and I welcome you to the third session in our program on mentoring using the principles of Menuchos Nefesh. This is we've had a break for 2 weeks. The first week there were technical problems, and last week, unfortunately, there was this great tsar that fell over Am Yisrael, and we hope that all the mishpachas, Hashem will give them a nechama, and all Klal Yisrael will have Yeshua. So, 3 weeks ago, when we last spoke, we we learned about Ari and the concept of the deeper self. If you remember, Ari was this young man who had a dream when he was a boy, and he had spent his entire life under the impression that he was empty and cold and heartless, without feelings, without humanness, until he remembered a dream he had at the night of his father's levaya, where he was in fact a very loving and caring young man, which changed his perception of himself. And we said that there are two dimensions of self. There's one dimension that brings us closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It is a dimension of that resides within each of us. It's closer to our neshama. It's closer to who we are. It's a dimension of being that we say on Shabbos of Ava and the Dava, and the ability to love and to care and to take care of people and to give. As Rabbi Ruchem writes, Rabbi Ruchem Lubavitz, Satan. And there's another dimension of ourselves, a dimension of ourselves which is separate and alien and distant and cold and calculating and heartless. Doesn't really care about other people, distracted, self-centered. And we call that dimension the dimension of Pisa and Nefesh. And throughout our lives, the two dimensions of ourselves are constantly changing. They're always there. But we experience ourselves gravitating towards one dimension or another. So perhaps I may be, I remember when I was in Eretz Yisrael, I used to travel, go on the road from Tel Aviv to Yerushalayim, the Sneer Shkia. You can always see people getting out of their cars and davening on the road. And you can imagine that's not the best place to daven for Kavana. Cars are whizzing by. It's not a place for his bodedus or to feel any kibbutz Hashem. And if you're davening in the Kotel a few, maybe that night or the next day, you feel that closeness, you feel that Kirbas Hashem, you feel the amkus of Tefillah. So let's say you ask a person who was davening one day on the road, you say, "I saw you davening on the road. How does it feel?" He says, "Oh, terrible, don't do it. You can't concentrate. Cars are whizzing by, the horns, everything else. You're nervous." But the Kotel, Baruch Hashem. So you say, "Well, are there two different yous?" No, it's only one you. But there are two dimensions of self. One self is distant from Hashem, one dimension. The Gashmi self, the nervous self, the tense self. And one dimension of self is closer to Hashem. And it emerges, it comes out of hiding in a place like the Kotel. in a Mokum Kodosh, with people who are special, when you're with Gedolim, when you're with family, when you're with people that you care for, that dimension of self emerges. So, I once saw that in the, we say every morning, in the Kai Neshama, Chazal says that the Neshama that we experience here, that self, that deeper self, is a self that one day is going to stand in front of the Kisei HaKavod, the same self. But it's not going to be the self that's standing on the road and davening. It's going to be the self that's standing by the coastal and davening. Ari, he experienced that deeper self, that Kedusha self, that Menuchas HaNefesh self. Now, some people go through life never really experiencing this Menuchas HaNefesh self. We may know some ourselves. I see them, unfortunately, quite a bit. A man came to see me. I had never met him before. He came. He told me that his parents were Holocaust survivors. He's been married a number of years. He's on the verge of a divorce. He's a very fine person, very intelligent, very sensitive. So he said, I want to ask you something, Shaya. He said, how come I live with parents who are survivors? My childhood was a Gehenna. We were always fearful of things that happened in the Holocaust would happen again. And I realized that growing up, even in America, I went ahead and I got married. And my marriage has been a terrible marriage. A horrible marriage. And now I'm going through a divorce, and I'm going to have to maybe give up my children, or at least share custody. So he says, why is life so difficult? Or another person comes to me and says, I've had a very difficult life also. I went to a mekubal, and because I've had a lot of emotional difficulties over my life. And the mekubal said to me, I don't know what he looked at. Maybe he looked at her hands, maybe he looked at her nose, her face. I don't know what he looked at. But he looked at me and he said, you'll never get married. I mean, I don't know what mekubal is an avi. But that's what Mekubal told her. What's important is that both these people and many others like them carry around a feeling within themselves that life is over, that the deprivation they felt when they were younger is going to continue throughout their lives, because there is no other self. Just like Ari went through his life not remembering what that there was a moment in his life that was special in a dream, how much he loved his father and spent his whole life thinking that he had no love within himself. Many people feel that way, and sometimes it's even temporary. I want to even something that happened last night, a very interesting event happened last night. A young Kala came to me, not the Kala, I'm sorry, she's on the verge of either breaking a relationship or getting engaged. And a very sweet, pretty girl. They've gone out a number of times. And she says, but I feel nothing for him. I don't even know who he is. And I don't know how I can marry somebody who I don't know. And I met the young man, a very, very fine young man. So the strangest thing happened. Because as I was talking to her, she said to me, you know, I just remember something. I just remember that on the second date, I was so impressed with him, of his midas and his milas, that I went home and I told my mother that I'm going to marry him. But I forgot all about that second date. And since then, all I've been doing is wondering and whether I can marry him. It's like it went out of my mind. It's like it never happened. Isn't that interesting? There was a moment when she saw this young man who was a very special young man, and she appreciated who he was. And at that moment, she realized that this is her Zivig. And he didn't do or say anything to change her, to change her mind. He didn't treat her in a way that made her feel hurt or anything like that. She just got scared. She forgot. That deeper self on that second date was able to see him as a Zivig. And I met him, so I know why she saw him as a Zivig. But that deeper self was forgotten. And over the next 8 or 9 dates, and they met, she was completely distant from that deeper self. All she could be was in her Pisa and Nefesh self. Not completely, but forgot about that perception, forgot about that second date. So, essentially, whether we're dealing with a young girl who's dating, or a man who's going through a divorce, or somebody who's going through emotional difficulties and feels that this has been happening all of his life, our role, what we're attempting to do, is help a person get in touch with that deeper self. You know, a couple came to see me a couple of months ago. They told me, we've been married for, I think, 8-9 years. We can't remember when we weren't fighting. So for 8-9 years, they perceive themselves as a couple that's always going to fight until one day they're going to have to get a divorce. So Baruch Hashem, I was able to give them something within the first few sessions that enabled them to sit down together, ruig, quiet, peacefully. He said to me, you know, this never happened. This never happened in all the 8 years of our marriage. We were never able to sit down quietly and be with each other without fighting. Why? Because the deeper self, this neshama, the menuchas ha-nefesh self of both was able to emerge in those few moments. And they began to experience something they never experienced before. I tell people when couples come to me, no one ever fights in front of me. If you fight, then it doesn't pay to come to see me. Go to somebody else. I don't want to make things worse, I want to make things better. The neshama is in the neshama of meshi, of silk. It's in the neshama of ava nedava. We're attempting to help people touch that deeper neshama. Even if their whole life has been a perception that I am a sick person, I'm a deprived person, I'm a lonely person, I'm a hurt person. My parents came from here, my parents treated me that way. I've been seeing so many different therapists over the years and it didn't make a difference. No matter what they say, our goal is to help people live life from that deeper self, to experience that Hashem gives them an neshama shenasat to be tohorihi. It's deep, it's pure, it's meshi, it's silk. And this is what we're trying to teach people. We teach it through our own personalities. We teach it by giving them things to do and things to read and things to listen to. This is the essence of what we are trying to give people. Particularly people who view themselves or view others in a certain way by saying that my parents, a young lady came and said, my mother is bipolar. Right? Or my mother is borderline personality. Right? Now, I don't think she'd ever got a diagnosis that way, that her mother was either of these. I think that's what she read on an article, and that's how she sees her mother. Or that's how he'll see his wife. Or that's how she'll see her husband. Right? Or that's how we see our kids. We put them in boxes, and we don't see them as human because we don't experience life from our own center. And that's why we put people in boxes and categorize them and diagnose them and treat them as if they're subhuman. No, we have to live life from a Tzelem Elokim, and we have to help people see the Tzelem Elokim in others. And that's the goal. Now, because as we will learn a little bit later when we talk about transformation, because Hashem never locks us up in a prison. Hashem gives each of us wings. Hashem never takes away our bechira. But that's a discussion for a future session, probably next session. We'll talk about transformations. This session we're talking about, we're going to discuss the five dimensions of self. Now, the five dimensions of self are, how do we experience life? So if I experience life as someone who has been deprived, or I experience life as somebody who is obsessive, or I experience life as somebody who is happy, and who is makir tov, right? Somebody who is close to Ribono Shel Olam. How do I experience life? What are the kelim that Hashem gives me to experience life? Now, so, and not only that, but once I know how I experience life, how do I change things? How do I change my attitude about my siblings, or my parents, or my wife, or my children, or my husband? How do I change those things? Or myself? So the first thing we're going to learn, which is today, is that there are five dimensions of how we experience life. Five kalim, five filters, so to speak. And they are the dimensions of our machshavas, our thoughts, the dimension of our feelings, the dimension of our physiology, how we feel physically, all of which we'll discuss, our behavior, and finally, how we experience deeper relationships to Hashem, to others, how well we can connect on that deeper level, which is the fifth dimension, the deeper self in relationships. Okay. So, let's talk about thoughts first. Thoughts play a very important role in what we do. I would like you all to take a moment, and I want you to close your eyes. And I want you to imagine, first I want you to close your eyes and imagine a cat. Right? It could be walking, it could be standing, you can see the eyes, you can see whatever you want. Imagine a cat. Imagine seeing now a black cat. It can be in the street, it can be in your house, it can be anywhere. Yerushalayim has, Baruch Hashem, lots of cats. Now I would like you to imagine a flower. Maybe a rose. Maybe a daffodil. A flower. A tulip. Give the flower colors in your mind. Red, green, blue, orange, any colors you want. Good. Now I'd like you to open your eyes. What have you seen? You saw a cat. Where did you see a cat? You saw a cat in your mind. You had a thought of a cat. A black cat. You also saw a flower. A colored flower, a colorful flower, a beautiful flower, a flower you put on the Shabbos table, a flower that a kala would hold in her hands as she's walking down to the chuppah. And where did you see it? You saw it up here, in your head, somewhere between your eyebrows and somewhere at the top of your head. Because that's where thoughts occur. Now, we have ideas that the thoughts in our minds at any given time are the only thoughts we have. Now, psychology has discovered something that Chazal knew a long time ago. That we have more than one thought in our mind at a given time. We have many thoughts in our minds. Our mind is filled with uncountable thoughts. It's just that at any given time, one thought will be more evident or more obvious, or will be more conscious of one thought than another. If you invite a furniture maker into your house, he's going to look at the furniture, right? That's where you invite somebody who puts down carpeting, he's going to look at the carpeting. Now, he's seeing other things at the same time as the furniture and the carpeting. He's taking in many things, but he's not aware of that. He's focused on the furniture and the carpeting, whoever that is. Right? Our minds are able to take in an incredible number of thoughts simultaneously. Now, so what that means is that sometimes we have thoughts which are positive and sometimes we have thoughts that are negative. I want to show you something. Right? Here I have a cup. Right? I was drinking from a cup. Well, you can't really see inside the cup, but let's say for our purposes you could see inside the cup and you could see whether the cup is half full or full. So let's say you came into my house and I offered you some tea. And you see the cup is half full or half empty. And you say to yourself, I come into his house and all he can give me is a cup that's half empty. What a consign. Treat me like a guest. Don't treat me like a beggar. Right? You wouldn't even treat a beggar that way. Give me a full cup. But what if you found out now that the tea that I'm serving you in this half-empty cup is really a very special tea, and you're supposed to have it in a cup that's half full, right? Because you want it to breathe, right? So it's you can drink it and enjoy it more that way. You say, oh. And you learn that I went to great effort to give you this tea because I know you like this tea. Well, now the cup is no longer half empty, but it's half full, right? It's half full. But something else has happened. When the cup was half empty, your thoughts about me was that I had negative thoughts about you. So the cup was half empty. And I wasn't treating you better because I had negative thoughts about you. Now when you learned the cup was half full because I had gone through all the effort, so now you have different thoughts. The thought is half full and I like you and I want to treat you as a very special guest. But there's something else now that I want to tell you, which is even more important. What I want to tell you is that you are having multiple thoughts at the same time. When the cup was half empty, you also had a thought that the cup was half full and that I was treating you in a special way, but you weren't aware of it. And when the cup was half full, you also had a special thought that the cup was half empty. And the cup was half full, it was half empty, but you weren't aware of that negative thought. In reality, you were having both thoughts, half empty and half full at the same time. I like you and I don't like you at the same time. And many other thoughts as well. But I want to say one more thing now, which goes beyond this. And that is that it's not the same. The thought down here, the half-empty thought, is not the same as the half-full thought. Because the half-empty thought is a teaser and nefesh thought. And the half-full thought is a menuchas and nefesh thought. When you feel good about yourself, when you feel that I like you, when you feel welcome in my home, and accepted and valued, that's menuchas and nefesh. And when you feel rejected, it's pizur and nefesh. Now both thoughts exist in your mind at the same time. The Rabbanu Shlolem says when you're in the menuchas and nefesh thought, then you're closer to the way he wants you to feel about yourself and about me. The Rosh Hashanah always wants us to be in menuchas and nefesh. And it's not that we're telling a lie to ourselves. What do you mean? This cup was half empty. No. Reality, I tell couples all the time when they come to see me, it's never a question of who's right and who's wrong. It's always a question of whether we're both working to create a feeling of shalom with each other. The closer we get to shalom between ourselves, the closer we get to the way the Eibusha, the way Rosh Hashanah wants us to be. And the further we are from shalom, the further we are from the Eibusha wants us to be. So it's not a question of right and wrong, how much tea is in the cup or not. The question is, what's going on in my head? In terms of, am I able? How well can I maintain that feeling of menuchas and nefesh? Because while the thought I have in my mind is that I may feel rejected, or that I may feel upset about something, or I may feel out of control, or I may feel that I'm, you know, my life is just going nowhere, I feel negative. So the question is, where does the Rosh Hashanah want me to be? So if that negative thought enables me to grab hold of myself and turn myself around, well, that's a very good thing. That enables me to have menuchas nefesh. But if that negative thought keeps me in a negative state and I can't get out of it, and I say, well, what can I do? I don't know how to get out. I shouldn't get out. This is who I am. Right? Well, that's not true. That's not reality. There is only one reality. The reality is how close we are to that neshama within ourselves, to the meshi, to the ava, to the nedava, to the way Rabbanu Shalom wants us to experience life, ourselves, our relationship to Him, those we care for, Am Yisrael. That's the only thing that matters. Every other truth is a sheker. There is no other truth. There may be objective truth when it comes to mathematics, when it comes to measuring voltage, when it comes to the physical world, in the inanimate physical world. But there are no other truths when it comes to the Tzelem Elokim world, to the world of Menuchas and Nefesh. We see over and over again that Rosh Hashanah wants us to be in Menuchas and Nefesh throughout our lives, because that's how we are Mekabel, the Shechina. Chazal says, Ein Hashras HaShechina B'Mokim Shel Atzvus. We're only in Mekabel, the Shechina, in a place of a Menuchas and Nefesh. So, thoughts then are those impressions that go through our minds, and as we become aware that the thought that we're having is not the only thought, and that there are other thoughts there as well that we can experience, because we are not creating a new thought. We're becoming aware of a thought, of a menuchas ha-nefesh thought that's there among all the others that are within ourselves. And as Chazal says, machshava is the highest experience of a person. It is that human effort of machshava, that human pu'ula of machshava, that is closest to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Because why? It exists in our minds. That's the highest point of who we are, closest to Ribbono Shel Olam. And more than that, a machshava doesn't have a molecular structure. It's kulo ruchnius. So it's ruchani, it's the highest level of who we are. And learning how to transform our thoughts, to go from negative thoughts to positive thoughts, to tap into to go from pizur and nefesh thoughts to menuchas and nefesh thoughts, is the basis of everything we're teaching. This is the basis, and this is the first of the five dimensions of self. Because how do I experience life? The foremost way I experience life is through my thoughts. I like you, you like me. I don't like you, you don't like me. I have to go here, I have to go there. I'm nervous, I'm tense. Right? Different thoughts. Right? I'm trying to daven Shemoneh Esrei, and my million thoughts are coming through my head. And I say, how come Hashem didn't give me the ability to daven like a mensch? How come every time I daven, my mind is filled with a million different things? We're going to teach people that they have the ability to maintain that sense of, to maintain the quality of thoughts that bring them to menuchas and nefesh. So that's the first level. That's the first dimension of self. And to be aware of it is very, very important. We're going to learn Be'ez Hashem next week, how do we transform thoughts? How do we go from the negative thought that the cup is half empty to the positive thought that the cup is half full? How do we do it? That will Be'ez Hashem cover. Right now we're talking about other dimensions. The second dimension of self is the dimension of feelings. Now feelings in Western culture, well, not just in Western culture, throughout history, feelings are very, very important. Hargoshes, to be a Adam Rikshi, is a very important element of being a Yid, of being a mother, of being a father, being Avodas Hashem, right? Tefillah B'Lev, right? But sometimes we get caught in negative feelings. And we define who we are frequently by how we feel. Now just remember, the difference between a thought or a feeling or a mood is enormous. Because a thought is something that goes through our minds, right? We can kind of see that black cat in our heads, right? We can see that flower in our minds. We can see it changing color. Feelings, though, are not only in our minds. Feelings overtake our entire guf, our entire body. They'll go from the top of our head to our toes. If I feel a sense of kinah towards somebody, well, that feeling of kinah is overwhelming, consuming. It's not just in my head. My whole guf is filled with kinah. If I feel a sense of sinah, or anger, right, or hurt, then everything within me is going to experience life from that perspective of that feeling. And the reality is that feelings are much more powerful than machshavas. Now, usually we're in the machshava mode, and feelings are not that frequent. Or they are frequent throughout the day, but intense feelings. But we will find that people who have had intense feelings in their growing up, such as the people I spoke about before, this man who was going through a divorce, whose parents were survivors of the Shoah, or this woman who felt that she would never get married, or somebody may have a feeling that they're frightened, or they're nervous, or they're worrying. They have a tremendous daiga. Maybe there's a chas v'shalom, they're worried that somebody's going to be ill. Maybe you see people all the time who are, we call hypochondriacs. They're afraid they're going to get sick. Right? Or somebody who will have a feeling of deprivation. See, all the time, feelings are so powerful. So thoughts are there all the time, and we help people transform them, and I'll explain, Bez Hashem, how. Feelings are much more intense. They're overwhelming. Now, thoughts are change our sense of who we are, feelings do it even more intensely. And so, but feelings frequently are rooted in earlier experiences. So a person who grew up with a sense of nobody likes me, or I'm going to be a failure, that feeling kind of accompanies that person throughout their life without even knowing it. It's what I call wallpaper. So let's say I grew up in a family that forgot about me. I was talking to somebody a while ago who told me that in my family nobody ever paid attention to me. I felt invisible. That's an invisible. That person still feels invisible, and that person is maybe 45 years old now. I call that wallpaper, because if you are in a house and you have wallpaper, you know, I think in the Hebrew called tapetim, right? Wallpaper. And I said, well, you've been living that wallpaper all these years. What color is that wallpaper? I forgot. I don't even look at it anymore. It's just there. Right? Or what color is the balatot? I don't even think about it. It's just there. The same thing. These feelings are just there. They get into our beings, and they nest there. That's where they live, and they don't move. They just hang around, and they claim to be us. They say, this is the real Shai, right? This is the real Rachel. This is the real whoever, right? This feeling. But you don't really have a chance to challenge it. You just accept it because it's been there so long. And it just doesn't seem to ever go away. It claims to be the real you. But it's never true. The real you we know is the you of Meshi, of Avin Nedova, of Anashamash and Nasatavi. That's the real you. That's the Ari you that's there. That these feelings come along and claim to be the real you, and it's so difficult to challenge them because they have so many experiences that say, how can you question that this is not the real me? Of course this is the real me. Well, we're going to learn that that's not the case. And that we're going to learn how to transform feelings, and then how never to let feelings determine who we are, how we see ourselves, how we act, how we perceive our relationship to Hashem and to others. We never permit feelings, negative feelings, pizur and nefesh feelings, to determine our lives. So what would a pizur and nefesh feeling be? We see it all the time. A pizur and nefesh feeling would be deprivation, anger, hurt, isolation, depression, worry, any feeling that detracts from the quality of our lives, that detracts from our simchas achayim. I think I told you that they asked the altar of Kelm, I'll just say it again, asked, "Why does a baby smile? Why does a baby smile?" And he gave the answer, "A baby smiles because that's who the etzem of the baby is. Hashem gave the baby a smiling neshama. It's smiling because it is able to be itself. When we get older, it's harder to smile because there are so many layers of experiences and of challenges that Hashem gives us. But the smiling baby never goes away. It is there. It is Hanashomish and Asatabi. It is always smiling. It is always close to the Rabbanu Shloma. So negative feelings that we have, which are so powerful, and I know people who go to therapists week after week, month after month, year after year, talking about their feelings. So you say, "No, what happened?" The same as Elbazach. They go week after week, month after month, year after year. How successful were you? Not frequently, I'm sorry to say that many people are not successful. They just keep on going. So we're saying that there is a deeper self, that smiling self that the altar is talking about, that's always there. That self that feels close to Rebbe Shlomim, Menuchas Nefesh, Emuna Bitochen. It never goes away. Our role is to help an individual transform that feeling, be able to quiet the negative feeling, the Pisur and Nefesh feeling, to quiet it down and to enable the real feeling of self to come to the surface. Somebody gave a mashal, which I like very much. You know, when a person goes fishing, so in the water there's a float. She's like a little ball that kind of stays on top of the water, and when the fish pulls on the hook, the float goes down under the water. So there is a teva that we have, the Rosh Hashanah gives us. It's a ruchnistic teva of that peace or of that menuchas and nefesh, and that our role is to cut, is to make sure that the seaweed is no longer keeping that float underwater. We want that float to come up, right? When this young lady the other night, I think was mamish last night, when she said that she remembered now on the second date that she had this tremendous feeling of appreciation of who this young boy was. And I want to tell you, I met him, she was right. I said to myself, that's the float coming to the surface. That perception in her that's not nervous, that was able to see who he is, right? And say, this is for me. It couldn't happen so quickly, she got scared and she forgot it. But that, so in our discussion, that float came to the surface. She was able to remember that about him, because that part of her personality that recognized him was able to come to the surface. We are attempting to help that part of these people's personalities, individual personalities, couples, individuals, to come to the surface like a float comes to the surface. The couple that I said, they were married 8 years and never had a moment, a peaceful moment with each other, not never, but hardly ever, and there they were experiencing this wonderful thing with each other. And so it comes to the surface, it's there. It's not that we're locked in forever. It's not as this Mekubal, whoever he may be, told this woman, "You'll never get married." It's not true. We are never prisoners. Jerusalem always is Bechira. We can always learn to touch the other thought, to be able to touch the other Hargosha. So that's the second dimension of the five dimensions. The third dimension is the dimension of physiology. Very important. We see people all the time. We ask them, "How you feel?" "Well, I'm feeling very tired." "Oh, I have headaches." "Oh, I was I went into a job interview and my heart started to palpitate, right? Started to beat fast. Or you can see people, or I went on a date or I was with my child and I got scared and I start to breathe at very shallow breaths. I began to breathe quickly, right? So I started to breathe quickly. And we see physiology changes all the time. Menuchas HaNefesh physiology is what we call, I don't know, I forgot the temperature gauges in Israel. In America, it's 98.6, right? Normal. You take a child's temperature, 98.6. You see a child is normal. We see we're normal. Normal temperature. The blood pressure is 120 over 80. Normal blood pressure. Baruch Hashem. Pizer HaNefesh is not 98.6, it's 103. Pizer HaNefesh is not normal blood pressure, it's higher blood pressure. What I mean is that Pizer HaNefesh physiology is that our breathing is not the way it should be, or maybe we have backaches, or maybe we have stomach aches, right? I have a young man came to see me who's married, who has what we call irritable bowel syndrome, right? and is in deep pain because he's fighting with his wife. And the result of the fighting leads to ulcers, to colitis, to irritable bowel syndrome. And he went to the doctor, and the doctor said, it's not physical, it's emotional. It's the tension that occurs between both of you that's causing this to happen. That's physiology. Physiology is when the mind, the thoughts and the feelings contribute to the way our body reacts. And in the world of Menuchas HaNefesh, we're trying to teach people that you can gain control over your life. Now you tell me you have headaches, but there's no known reason. Well, we want to teach people how to quiet headaches. People come and tell us we have TMJ, which is a tightening of the jaws due to pressure because people clench their teeth. You want to teach people how to drop that pressure, how to lower that tension. We want to tell people, people come to us and they say that they feel shakiness, right? They feel like they're plugged into the wall, into electric socket, because they're feeling a current going through their body. We want to teach them how to lower that current. We want to teach them how to be 98.6, how to bring physiology, the goof that Hashem gives us, to the level that we want it to be. Now, there are many stories that I can give you around physiology. I want to give you one story that is a very fascinating one, and it happened a number of years ago, but it really opened my mind to what we're discussing. A woman came to me with a child who had a neurological problem. She was epileptic. Child was suffering from epilepsy. She had seizures. And the mother said, I don't really understand what's happening. Maybe you can help me. My child was a healthy child. And then something happened and she had a seizure. And we looked into it and it turned out that there was an event that occurred in the school, a very traumatic event that occurred in the school. And because of that event, she started to shake. And they didn't know, and she had a seizure. And they took her to the emergency room. And in the emergency room, they said she'll be okay. But she came out of the emergency room, and the next day they released her, or maybe that day, and the next day she had another seizure. But no one understood why, and they took her to a neurologist. The neurologist said, let me take an EEG, an electroencephalogram, to measure the brain waves. The neurologist measured the brain waves and said, it's really borderline, but I think what happened is that the event that happened in school, the traumatic event, has triggered a potential for epilepsy. And your child is now epileptic. And we'll have to see whether we can contain it. The mother was obviously she was destroyed to hear this. She was hoping it wouldn't be the case, but it didn't change. Finally, the doctor said that every day she was having seizures. The doctor finally said, well, there's nothing you can do about it. All you can do is give her a medication the way we would give any epileptic. The mother was broken. The child, who was a very sweet young girl, was also broken because it changed everything in her life. She would never know when she would stop, when she'd be with friends, and all of a sudden she'd fall on the floor. So, the mother went from one neurologist to the next to find out what to do. And they all said medication. So she gave the child medication, but the medication didn't help. Every day the child was having seizures. And medications should help. So she came to me, she said, I don't know what to do. Maybe you can help me. I'm not a neurologist, but she thought that maybe I'd be able to give her some guidance, maybe speak to them, maybe I could speak their sprach, their lashon. So I met with one of the neurologists who knew this, who had seen this child, and this neurologist was not convinced that it was epilepsy. This neurologist said, well, I'm not too sure. The others saying it is, and even some of the gedolim neurologists saying it is, but I'm not too sure. So why don't you bring the child to my office and we'll take a look and maybe we'll find something else. And I took the child to the office and I sat there with this young girl. She was probably about 8 or 9 years old, a very sweet girl. She brought her homework and I brought a safer. And we sat. The doctor walked into the office, and as the doctor walks into the office, the little girl looks up and sees the doctor, and before you know it, she's on the floor, having a seizure on the floor of the doctor's office. People there were astounded. I mean, it was a neurologist. We don't see this happening too frequently. It's very frightening, particularly for an 8, 9-year-old girl. So we picked her up, and we put her onto a table, and we rolled her into the examining room, and the doctor did an EEG, and guess what? The EEG was normal. It was a perfectly normal EEG. The doctor says, this is definitely not epilepsy. But she was having the seizure in front of us. So we were told to go to a different doctor. This doctor was a pediatric psychiatrist who was a mumcha in these kinds of things. And after 6 months of this girl, this poor, sweet girl suffering from these seizures, we went to see this pediatric psychiatrist who taught the girl a little bit about meditation, an 8, 9-year-old girl. He made a recording for her. He gave her a bit of a tranquilizer, not much. And suddenly the seizure stopped. So we say, V'ken hazayin, how could it be that a girl has a seizure every day and you stop just by giving her a little bit of a tranquilizer and a recording? So he said the following. She said, when the original event in school occurred, that was a traumatic event, and that created a seizure because she was so her system was so upset by it. Now, what happened was that the mind records that experience. And the mind records that experience, and as the mind records that experience, it creates a almost like a mailbox in the mind. So when anything happens to remind that little girl of that original experience, maybe she'll see a teacher, or maybe she'll see a sibling, or maybe she'll see a doctor. In this case, it was the neurologist who walked into the office that reminded her of the original experience. So that when this happens, this girl goes back into that mailbox. And she behaves, her physiology changes. She begins to experience, she begins to behave as she was, as if she was an epileptic, having a seizure. But the seizure is not physical in that sense. Now, other forms of physiology may be more physical. The headache is formed by the flow of blood to the head, the backache, the stomach ache, the acid. Being nervous creates a higher intensity of acid in the stomach. Palpitations of the heart, when the heart's beating wildly because someone is frightened. I know of a young man who had a terrible fear of making mistakes when he was davening for the Amid, and he had yahrzeit. Ma'aseh Shehoya, he had yahrzeit, and on a Shabbos, so he wanted to daven. He said, "Fine, of course you daven." So he went to daven. And he started davening, and at right, he said, Ashrei, and then he was going to put the Sefer Torah back into the Aron. They gave him the Sefer Torah, and all of a sudden, his legs started to shake. His knees started to shake, and he felt as if he was going to faint. So he said, "All right, Baruch Shalom," he said, "I'm going to faint holding a Sefer Torah. There might be 100 people in the base in the base of Medrash here. They're going to think I'm a meshugan. They're going to think, maybe, I hope I'm having a heart attack. At least there'll be a reason that I'm doing this." Baruch Hashem, he was able to hold himself back and straighten himself out. But physiology is such an important thing. We see in this week's parsha, we see by Yaakov Avinu, you say that Rashi tells us that Rashi's that Yaakov's lev, Aisot libo, that his heart, Rashi tells us that his heart made it kal lelechet, that he felt because he had the avtocha der bon shlolam, he was able to pick up his feet and go towards Lavan, even Lavan, because this feeling, this hargosha, transformed the fact that all his money had been taken away from Eliphaz by Eliphaz, the fact that he was going to love him. The fact that he left his mother and his father that he loved so dearly, that he was alone now. He couldn't move. But with Avtocha now, once again, physiology, he couldn't move, but we see what happens to him. We see that he's able to pull himself up and pull himself together. So physiology is such an important, important aspect, particularly when dealing with chasonim and kalas. Come out every day, I get a chosn or a kala who was having a panic attack, anxiety attack, and say, "Well, if my stomach hurts me, or if I'm worried, if I'm having bad dreams, or I can't eat, or my hands are shaking, v'chuli, I have headaches, it must mean that it's not for me." And that's not the case. It's physiology, but it's pizur nefesh physiology. What we're attempting to do is helping people get a sense of how to take control over the physiology. Okay, let's go on to the fourth one now. We have a few minutes left. We're going to finish these. Fourth is behavior. Now, pizur nefesh behavior and menuchas nefesh behavior. Big difference. Pizur nefesh behavior is that behavior which is self-centered, which cares about nobody, which has no real value in bringing us closer to Ribbono Shel Olam and bringing others closer to Ribbono Shel Olam. Addictions are pizur nefesh behavior. Nivul peh is Pizur Nefesh behavior. Doing things selfishly is Pizur Nefesh behavior. Doing things destructively is Pizur Nefesh behavior. Driving irresponsibly is Pizur Nefesh behavior. Smoking, Chas v'Shalom, drugs, alcohol, eating disorders. These are all Pizur HaNefesh behaviors. People have a sense that I'm trapped in this. I can't change. And it was somebody recently who told me that she's trapped in a Pizur HaNefesh cycle, addiction of sugar addiction. She eats enormous amount of sugar every day, gobbles bags full of cookies, and then vomits it out. And she can't maintain her sense of equilibrium, and then she can't go to sleep. And she can't go to sleep, and then in the morning she's tired, and she can't go to work. It's a cycle of Pizur HaNefesh behavior. Menuchas HaNefesh behavior is that form of behavior which gives others, which cares about others, which does for others, which brings you closer to Ribbono Shel Olam. Obviously, any kind of chesed is a Menuchas HaNefesh behavior. Tefillah, learning, doing things, caring for people, showing you care. The way you speak, speaking gently, is Menuchas HaNefesh behavior. Communicating is a Menuchas HaNefesh behavior in a positive way. Okay? If a person is angry and shows others that they're angry, they're going to hurt people. That their anger may be the hargosha, but it comes out in terms of behavior. You're behaving in a way that's hurting somebody. I recently saw a young man, recently as today, a young man came to see me who has been criticized all of his life. And you can see how the criticism that he's received from his parents, what has caused him, the damage that has caused him. Now, we're not criticizing anybody here. I haven't seen the parents. But clearly this kind of criticism is Pizur HaNefesh behavior. We want to teach people how to have choices, how to change their behavior, how to stop the addictions, how to behave in a way that is able to give to others. Because when a person has a piece of beneficial behavior, they're out of control. I always say, piece of behavior, you can take in Mitzrayim, right? A form of piece of beneficial behavior, take the makkah of the tzfadeya, right? Interesting thing. Rashi said there was only one frog, and that frog multiplied. How did it multiply? That every time you hit the frog became two frogs. So I think the Beis HaLevi asked, well, how could that have been a makkah? Maybe the Mitzrayim would not have kicked the frog. Maybe they wouldn't hit the frog. So there'd only be one frog. There wouldn't be a makkah. So the answer he gives is the Rosh Hashanah knows that even though the Mitzrayim knew that by kicking the frog and making it multiply, they can't stop. They're frog kickers. They're imprisoned in Pizur HaNefesh behavior. A Ben Torah, a Baal Emunah, a Baal Bitochan, always knows that there is no such thing as a prison, and he doesn't have to kick the frog. I'll give you one more mashal that I like very much about Pizur HaNefesh behavior. It's a favorite of mine. How do they capture monkeys in Africa? Very interesting way of doing it. So the way they capture monkeys in Africa, I'm sure there are many ways, but one of the ways that I read about, let's say this is a basket, a wicker basket, right? They take this basket and they tie it to a tree. And they put a top on the basket. And they put a banana in the basket. So the banana inside the basket here. On the top they put a hole. A monkey comes along and he can put his hand in the hole of the basket. Right? The hole is big enough to accommodate the open hand of the monkey. when the monkey grabs on the banana, right? I'll say, quote this though. Banana, right? Banana. He now has a fist. The fist is too low, it's too big to get through the hole. His hand is stuck in that basket. All he has to do is let go of the banana and he can take his hand out. But the monkey never lets go of the banana. That's pizer and nefesh behavior for us. For a monkey, that's his instinct. He lives by instincts. We are tzelebel akim. We don't live by instincts. HaRosham always gives us the ability to go from pizer and nefesh behavior, from addictions to anger, to anything that's negative, right? To criticism, to menuchas and nefesh behavior. To be caring and loving and kind and thoughtful and gentle the way he wants us to be. And that's something else we can learn. How to transform behavior. How to go from Tizur and Nefesh to Menuchas and Nefesh. There's one more dimension of self. So far we've had our thoughts, our feelings, right? Our physiology, our behavior. And there's one more dimension, which is our deeper selves, which we've been discussing all along, the self of Ari, and how close we feel to Hashem when we daven, and how close we feel to those we care about, how loved we help people feel who are with us. I remember, I was Baruch Hashem, I was Zocha to know Rav Moshe, the self. Anybody who came in Rav Moshe's Dalet Amos felt like a very special person. Very special person. He had that yachas to everybody. His son Rav David has the same has the same midah. We want to create that feeling in our families, in our relationships. We want to create that deeper self, that fifth dimension of self, that Ari dimension that we're talking about. See, once again, because it's only through this deeper self that we become a makom for Shechina. And we say, so creating, cultivating this deeper self through how we behave and how we daven and how we think and how we feel, and how we build relationships, whether we're married, or we're dating, or we're parents, or we're teachers, right? Or we're working with chasanim and kalas, or we're working with married couples. Wherever we are, creating, using our own deeper self, using that feeling within ourselves of anuchas and nefesh, and creating the kesharim with other people, and enabling other people to have those kesharim. And building those ksharim within ourselves with the Ribbono Shel Olam, this is that part of us that we are cultivating. This is the goal of this program. And next week Bez Hashem, we're going to learn transformations, and then we're going to start our journey through the six gates of personal empowerment, of self-empowerment. We're going to be learning six areas of how we change, how we transform Pizer and Nefesh to Menuchas Nefesh. We're going to be learning the principles that deal with thoughts. We're going to be learning about centering, about how to use our hands in a certain way. We're going to learn the pulse exercise. We can learn about inner circle. We're going to learn some marvelous breathing exercises. And we're going to learn the power of walking in transforming ourselves. So these are the five dimensions of self that we cover today. And so during the week, what I'd like you to be aware of, while I'm not yet giving you the skills to transform, Bez Hashem next week we'll do that, I'd like you to be aware of what you're thinking and what you're feeling and how your body is changing and how your behavior is changing. Just be aware, and Bez Hashem, next week when we get together again, we're going to start to learn how to transform a lot of these, all of these dimensions of self to go from Pizar and Nefesh to Menuchas Nefesh Bezus Hashem. Have a wonderful week. Okay, I'm finished.